9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The U.S. approves the world's first medical treatment using gene-editing CRISPR technology. And U.S. job growth slows down in November.
This report is renewing optimism that the economy can achieve a potential soft landing, which is where we see inflation come down without triggering a recession.
Plus, antitrust regulators in the UK are taking a closer look at the partnership between Microsoft and OpenAI. It's Friday, December 8th. I'm Pierre Bien-Aimé for The Wall Street Journal, sitting in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The FDA has approved the world's first medicine to use CRISPR technology, a gene-modifying tool discovered just over a decade ago. The new treatment, Casgevy, was developed by Vertex Pharmaceuticals and CRISPR Therapeutics, and it was cleared for people with severe forms of sickle cell disease, a painful genetic condition that mainly affects Black people. Joseph Walker covers biotechnology for The Wall Street Journal, and he joins me now. Joseph, how does this treatment work?
So essentially, it uses the CRISPR technology to go in and cut a gene that, once you cut it, it turns off the gene, and that allows for the production of fetal hemoglobin to come in and restore some of the functionality of hemoglobin from the disease. First thing to understand is that sickle cell disease is caused by a genetic defect that causes malformed hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is a protein in the blood. And so by using CRISPR to help turn the fetal hemoglobin back on, it gives these patients a substitute hemoglobin.
And what does the actual treatment look like with a patient?
Well, it involves the patient having their stem cells taken from their bone marrow. Those stem cells are then shipped to a lab where they're modified with CRISPR-Cas9 technology to make those edits to the fetal hemoglobin gene, and then shipped back to the hospital, where the patient has to undergo about a week of chemotherapy, basically to wipe out a big portion of their bone marrow to make room for the stem cells to be reinfused. And then once they are, another month or so in the hospital while they recover.
So this treatment's just been approved today, but how has it performed in tests so far?
So it looks really good. For most patients, they've gone from treatment through the present day without having these severe painful crises in which their blood flow essentially gets blocked because of the lack of a functional hemoglobin. So they look like normal patients now.
And what about the cost for this treatment?
The price will be $2.2 million per patient. All insurance companies will have to decide for themselves. A good portion of patients are in Medicaid, so those will be state decisions. But for the most part, it has a good chance of being reimbursed, especially over time, because this is a really serious disease. It causes people a lot of pain, a lot of heartache, and also to cost the healthcare system a lot of money from hospitalizing them. So I think that the calculus may be there for insurance companies to say, we will cover this one-time treatment to help forestall additional costs in the future.
And let's zoom out a little bit here. Joseph, what's the significance of the FDA approving such a new kind of treatment?
Well, so this is the first CRISPR-based therapy that's been approved in the U.S., and that really is a remarkable achievement. This is technology that was first discovered a little bit more than a decade ago, and it's become one of the biggest deals in science because of its potential power to alter human genetics, to alter the sources of disease at their root. And so this is a really big milestone, and hopefully more to come from this technology. There's drugs being developed for cancer, for other types of rare genetic diseases, including ones that affect heart disease, like high cholesterol caused by hereditary genetic defects. You could see more cures, but the technology has to be improved to the point where it's not so arduous for it to have, you know, large-scale impacts on the population at large. And I don't think that that is coming anytime soon.
Joseph Walker covers biotechnology for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up, the latest U.S. jobs report brings the economy's soft landing into view. That's after the break.
Technology can make the world better. At UST, we're building a future where people everywhere are empowered to live better lives.
It's transformation you can feel.
And you don't have to do it alone.
We believe in the power of technology to transform businesses and build a better world.
Late Labor Department data shows the U.S. economy added 199,000 jobs last month. The moderate pace marks the latest sign of a cooling labor market. The unemployment rate edged lower to 3.7% and is still near historic lows. Here now to tell us what it all means for the economy and the Fed is our reporter Amara Omokwe. Amara, what do these numbers say about the state of the economy?
So basically, this report is renewing optimism that the economy can achieve a potential soft landing, which is where we see inflation come down without triggering a recession. And the reason why optimism is sort of high about that outcome is because what we're seeing is that the pace of jobs growth has slowed from last year and earlier in 2023. We've seen wage growth ticked down also. So these are some of the signs that are pointing to this idea that the economy is cooling off, but still remaining on pretty solid footing here.
And is the Federal Reserve among those optimists when they look at this data?
Well, the Fed has been cautious about declaring victory in its fight to bring down inflation. But the expectation is that when the Fed meets next week, that they're going to keep interest rates steady as they have in recent meetings. And that's just pointing to this idea that inflation is improving. It is moving in the direction that the Fed would like to see. But the Fed is still being cautious here because they don't want to declare victory too early. So what you see the Fed essentially saying is, let's basically take a moment here to assess how the interest rate hikes that we've already done are impacting the economy, as opposed to lifting them further.
And what about hourly earnings, which are still above pre-pandemic levels?
So on a monthly basis, average hourly earnings ticked up, but from a year earlier, they ticked down. And so what economists are saying is that is broadly in line with a slowdown in wage growth. And we know that that's important because the Fed is looking for the labor market to be in better balance than it was when there were widespread labor shortages. So this slowdown in wages that we've seen as we've continued in 2023 is evidence that that rebalancing is happening.
That's economics reporter Amara Omokwe. Thanks, Amara.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, consumer confidence seems to be surging, reversing 4 months of decline, as easing inflation leaves Americans feeling brighter about the economic future. That's according to a preliminary reading of the University of Michigan's Consumer Confidence Index. It surged to 69.4 points from 61.3 at the end of November. Antitrust regulators in the UK are examining Microsoft's partnership with ChatGPT creator OpenAI. It's a first step that could lead to a formal investigation. The Competition and Markets Authority, or CMA, is one of the world's most influential. OpenAI has gone through a tumultuous time, with the abrupt firing and reinstatement of CEO Sam Altman last month, and the creation of an observer role for Microsoft on OpenAI's board of directors. Wall Street Journal reporter Kim McCrail covered the story, and she joins me now. Kim, this is not yet an investigation, but a call for feedback on the partnership between Microsoft and OpenAI. What's the CMA concerned about?
The CMA is basically interested in understanding more about the relationship between Microsoft and OpenAI. So it's a partnership. Microsoft has invested heavily in OpenAI, and the CMA is looking to understand whether that relationship is extensive enough, has gone far enough that they would consider it to be basically a de facto merger. If it is a de facto merger, in their view, they would potentially consider whether to open up an investigation into what kind of impact it could have on competition.
If this goes through and the CMA does end up launching an investigation, what could be the implication for these two companies?
It is a situation that it's unclear whether they would actually open an investigation just yet. But if they did open an investigation into the relationship as a merger, it's something that would be a multi-month process. There are a couple of different possible outcomes. And one of them, the most extreme one, is that they consider this to be a merger that has unacceptable effects on competition in the United Kingdom. And in this case, they could potentially require some form of separation of the companies. They could ask the companies to make structural changes of another kind, or they could ask them to commit to certain changes in behavior and the way they do business. And it's also possible that at the end of an investigation, they could actually say they don't see a competition concern and they can remain as they are.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Kim McCrail. And Microsoft said its partnership with OpenAI has preserved the independence of both companies and fostered AI innovation and competition. OpenAI said the partnership empowers it to pursue research and develop safe and beneficial AI tools while remaining independent and competitive. In other news, a federal appeals court in New York ruled that the state can prohibit licensed gun owners from carrying concealed weapons into theaters, bars, public parks, and other public spaces. Last year, the Supreme Court announced a broader interpretation of the Second Amendment, which called a range of gun regulations into question. This ruling is the first from a federal appeals court since then to broadly consider where licensed gun owners have a right to go armed. Russian President Vladimir Putin confirmed today he would run for re-election next year. It was a widely expected decision, and one that could keep him in power until at least 2030. Putin made the announcement at a ceremony for military personnel, the day after the Upper House of Parliament set the election for March 17th. And finally, I say potato, you say potato, but we both agree it's a vegetable, right? Well, not everyone does. Kids especially may want credit for eating veggies in the form of fries, but an American Scientific Advisory Committee is drafting recommendations for an update to the U.S.'s official nutritional advice to consider moving potatoes to a broader category of rice, other grains, and carbohydrates. Food and agriculture policy reporter Christina Peterson says that possibility has potato growers grumbling.
The potato industry is worried that this could ultimately end up with potatoes not being considered a starchy vegetable, which is how they're classified now, and end up being grouped with a broader set of carbohydrates. The dietary guidelines dictate certain conditions tied to school lunches and school breakfasts, so that's an important consideration. If they were reclassified as something other than a vegetable, that could jeopardize certain grants that are available for fruits and vegetables. And then I think just broadly, there's the reputational element. They would like to be considered a vegetable. You know, vegetables are considered healthy in a way that other foods aren't all the time. And they want to remain in the vegetable category, which is what potatoes are, botanically speaking.
And while potatoes can be part of a healthy diet, according to nutrition researchers, the health benefits go down if they're fried, which many potatoes in the U.S. are, according to the Department of Agriculture. And that's what's news for this week. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi. What's News is hosted by Anne-Marie Fertoli and Luke Vargas, with guest hosting today by me, Pierre Bien-Aimé. Additional support this week from Peter Granitz, Shelby Holliday, and Sabrina Siddiqui. Our supervising producers are Sandra Kilhoff and Michael Kosmides. Aisha Al-Muslim is our development producer. Scott Salloway and Chris Sinsley are our deputy editors. And Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll have What's News in Markets tomorrow, and we'll be back with another full episode on Monday. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.